This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Yeah.
It's a good song.
I love this song.
It was a good song.
It's a badass song.
Welcome to the Blacklist After Buzz show. Right?
Yes,
right.
After show. The Blacklist After Show.
Blacklist After Buzz After Show.
The Blacklist After Show on After Buzz.
Yes. Welcome to Blacklist After Show.
Someone's still recovering from the Super Bowl.
We are back, folks. We're back. We're happy to be back. I've been off for a while. I'm Joe Braswell. Happy to be back. I'm joined, as always, by the lovely Nando Velasquez.
Oh, thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
We have not been together since last year, since 2014.
That's very true.
It's good, yes.
Happy
good
New
to see
Year,
you.
Gentlemen.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm also joined by the loveliest of them all, Julia Kearley.
Oh, well, thank you for Hello. That. Happy 2015 to me.
And I did see you. I've seen you. I saw you on my birthday.
I did.
I didn't see you on my birthday.
You weren't invited.
Oh, okay.
No. No big deal. Julia did the invites. I don't know.
Oh, that makes sense.
Well, that's the last time I threw you a party.
On the line, we might have. No?
No.
Okay. Well, at some point, we're going to have the mysterious Joe Sanfilippo, who's not here.
The year of Flippo.
This is the year of Flippo. 2015.
And if you know why he's not here, it's such a year of Flippo.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
He
was probably rooting for the Seahawks.
Flippo also at my birthday.
But then he'll deny it.
By the way, Nando.
He was also your birthday?
Yeah. What happened?
You weren't at mine, so we both had birthdays.
That's right. We're both
in January babies.
Yeah, we're both Capricorns.
No, I'm Aquarius. I'm the better one.
Oh, okay. No one cares about either of us.
No one cares.
What we do care about
no
is
no one was at my birthday this Saturday.
Oh, your birthday Saturday. Oh.
Our engineer Josh's birthday was a Saturday.
Happy birthday, Josh.
A lot of birthdays here.
We're all set.
Yeah,
we all caught up.
Well,
there's some blacklists to be talking about.
Well, let's just say new set. First of all, for those of you who haven't tuned in on YouTube,
sure.
Brand new set, looking really, really good here.
Here we are.
We have a hashtag, ABTV Blacklist. If you notice on our lower thirds, have we done our introductions? Yeah, we did do our introductions. So ABTV Blacklist, if you want to tweet us anything, Blacklist.
And also this setup wasn't here last time we were here as a Blacklist podcast, but we are now on YouTube, streaming on YouTube. So you can check us out at youtube.com. /AfterBuzz TV. Please subscribe to that.
Yep.
That's actually happening in real time now, which is very cool. We're also on iTunes and SoundCloud as well.
Yeah.
So
we're everywhere.
We're everywhere. Ubiquitous.
There's and no excuse now.
And you can tweet us at our handles, Nando Vell for me.
Julia Caroli for me.
And
Joe K. Braswell.
And it's also on the lower thirds too. It's really cool. If you guys aren't watching us on YouTube, you should. It's really cool.
Blacklist. 45 minutes in. Let's talk about the show.
That's our problem.
The Blacklist is back, folks. Black is back. Red is back. Black. Red is black. Red is not black.
Red is not black.
Red is back.
He is.
On the Blacklist. Sorry.
Right. Can we just, right before, and this is not to go off topic, we just talk about the fact, I mean, it's awesome that NBC aired this show right after the Super Bowl. Huge ratings.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just shows the confidence they have in the show. I mean, that's a slot reserved for shows that the network, you know, whatever the network is that has Super Bowl wants to either relaunch something or relaunch something or have their best show, their best episode behind the Super Bowl when you have, you know, millions and millions and millions of people, almost a billion people watching.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I was worried how it was going to come off to newcomers, but I think they did a really good job in that first the first little chunk of the show with all the newscast talking about Red. I was doing a quick catch-up for the newcomers to the show.
I think so. I think I read a good, interesting article, believe it or not, from Forbes, talking about TV.
Sure.
And they actually commented on the fact that this episode, it's a hard balance to try and entice new viewers and
keep the old ones
happy without like alienating them and not, you know, answering certain questions or keeping people us kind of like us today.
we're doing a great job.
We're doing it. But I think they did a really, really good job. And I think just the introduction, even showing Red getting arrested, kind of like he was in the pilot almost in a way.
This was kind of a repilot, you know, in a lot of ways. And it felt like, you know, like a lot of the cable stations do with, you know, Mad Men's doing this and Breaking Bad did this, where you break up this one season into two sort of seasons. This feels like, even though it's in the same, what's a different year, but it feels like this is season three, but it's actually the back half of season two. So it's very cool. Very cool relaunch. I like the way they did it. A lot of story. We talked about this a little beforehand, but a lot done, in a very short amount of time to sort of catch us all up. But I didn't care. It's like, Red's in China? Okay. Red got arrested somehow? All right, sure.
Yeah.
He's in a deep, dark black site? Fine. With a bunch of crazy guys? Okay, I didn't know. And the CIA is now, what David Strathern, what's happening here?
Yeah.
Who cares? It's awesome. I loved it. I loved it so far.
I've learned to not question some things.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, I want to jump into this. This is like probably my favorite episode next to the pilot itself. It really sort of like lived up to what the pilot delivered with this sort of like action pack, again, Joe Carnahan directed, action packed sort of thriller, if you will, spy thriller. And it felt like with all these big action set pieces, a lot going on, it's kind of everything I wanted this show to be. And then I felt like, although I love the show, I felt like it kind of went down some other roads. And this is a really, like, it really, really hooked me in with this episode, like from in every way, shape, and form. I loved it. I don't know. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Well, look, it hooked me in. I think it's a great show to show on the Super Bowl. They obviously had this plan for the Super Bowl show. They knew about this ahead of time. So this is exactly the show.
We have the scoop from our man.
Aram?
Aram, thank
yes.
you.
But they had an idea exactly where to go with this. I mean, they put some big names. I mean, Ron Perlman, David Strayhorn, you know.
Strathern.
Yeah. Is it Strayhorn or Strathern?
Strathern.
Strathern.
Strathern?
Okay.
Strathern.
Strathern. Okay. And Janelle Malone?
Janelle Maloney.
Oh, God. Am I reading their Twitter accounts here? Is that what I'm doing? The late night shows always mess me up. That's my excuse. But I think it's really good. And look, you know what? There is some really good information here that we're learning some more about the relationship between Red and Lizzie.
Yeah, well, I want to get to that.
The fulcrum. We're getting all these little extra, even Red, even the first couple of minutes, just the newscast talking a little bit about Red's history. I think there were like nice little nuggets there that you're like, oh, I didn't realize that, or just hearing all this.
Well, you touched on this too. You touched on the newscast, Julie, and we talked about this before. I thought it just did such a great job of giving us all of this like exposition to catch everyone up. And also to inform us kind of what the world we're living in now. They totally did a great job of setting up the world, setting up Red's world, setting up the FBI, setting up these new characters, new faces, which I want to talk about, setting up like everything we needed to know and see that happened within the first probably felt like 3 minutes of the show. You know,
and for somebody who is brand new to the show, I think they have a well-rounded idea of who Red is and who the backbone of this entire show is.
Right.
They really captured it perfectly.
Yeah, the newscast was great.
Well done.
Right after the Super Bowl, watching the Super Bowl, all of a sudden straight into a special report. Red Reddington captured.
Oh yeah, I almost missed it.
Yeah,
I thought it was a news report. No. I was like, oh wait a second.
It was great. It was great. So let's talk about I want to talk about some of these new faces. And first of all, we have you know, that episode is Luther Braxton.
Yes,
number 21.
You know who. Lived up to all expectations. I mean, it was, you know, Ron Perlman, and he is a complete 1,000% badass. Just having him on the show, seeing him there, you know, with his hair, he got the Guy Fieri like hair going on right now, and everything happening. He was so awesome, and I loved it.
I think he's so powerful in anything that he does that it didn't even matter to me that he did not say a freaking word for the first 10, 15 minutes yeah. of
oh, that
the show.
Well, the first shot of him getting electroshock therapy and just taking it.
But all of that through, he threw in a go-go at one point, but he didn't talk for the first 10 minutes.
That's a great point. That's a great
but
point.
He's so commanding and terrifying and awesome.
Yeah. This is another thing. Like, I feel like that they've done a great job with, at least now, they're really sort of populating the show with all these fantastic actors. Mm. And it helps elevate the material, which, you know, is good. But, you know, there's some suspension of disbelief going on here. Like, I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of leaps that were made. I'm like I said, I'm just kind of shrugging. Okay, if you say so, you know, okay, fine. But I believed it all because you have, very convincing Janelle Maloney as a new CIA liaison.
Mm-hmm.
You have David Strathairn as some shady. Was he the director?
That's his name, the director. That's what they referred to him as. They didn't say the director of what, but I'm guessing it's some kind of U.S. agency where he could be in the room with.
It was the CIA.
I'm guessing is that the CIA director?
They referenced Janelle's from the CIA.
Yeah,
he's there, and they referenced him as the director. And I don't know whether it's not the FBI.
I guess that's just weird because when you look him up on IMDb as well, his character it says the director.
Interesting.
Doesn't even say CIA director.
Maybe that's intentionally vague. Probably intentionally vague.
Well, you know how everyone has like a certain code name or anything. I almost wonder if like that's his special name.
The director. I'm the director.
No, he's a guy who can. Well, he's a guy who has the authority to call in the airstrike. So,
and he seems to be the perfect replacement for Fitch.
I mean,
especially star power and everything. You know,
he's one of the man's got Oscar nominations. He's got he was fantastic in the Bourne movies, Bourne 3 and 4. I mean, he's that guy.
He was in Alphas. He was great in Alphas.
He's great in Alphas.
Yeah,
love that show, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, well. it's good to see him. I love the idea of. And so they did enough sort of clean house, and we talked about this at the beginning of the season. They sort of pared this down to the essential team that we have. You know, we have Aram, we have Wrestler, we have Lizzie, Red, and Navabi. And of course Harold Cooper. It seems a lot more unwieldy than before. We had all of these folks. We had, you know, so many people. I am worried about my man, Dembe. Where is he?
Well, Dembe didn't get captured.
Because he had been arrested.
That's true.
Yeah. He's probably at home chilling out in the mansion while Red carries his plan.
I imagine. I would love to have seen him in this episode doing something.
You know who else we didn't see?
Who?
Tom.
Oh, I'm well aware
and that's
of this.
A big question. Yeah,
yes, very true.
Well aware that I did not see Tom.
Very true. So, yeah, new faces. I love getting in. Go ahead.
But it was actually okay that we didn't see Tom because I think this episode was so
it
focused.
Would confuse it. Yeah, it would
yeah
confuse
that
it.
Yeah. We were focused on this prison and what was happening at the FBI, and that's kind of what I enjoyed about this episode. I thought it was really balanced with the action, the exposition. Mm-hmm. But like I said, very focused, so I didn't really worry about Tom.
Yeah.
I was really in this world at this moment.
I'm with you. I agree. The
it's rare I don't worry about Tom.
I can't wait. Is Joe coming? Do we have him? Is he Flippo? Did you tell him the call?
Yeah, we did, didn't we?
I don't know. I don't think we did.
Whose job was that?
I think that was your job.
Was that my job?
Yeah.
Oh, I must have messed it up.
Oh, yeah. No one told him to call. Sorry. Flippo's... We're doing the show. Yes, call in.
It's nice to know he wasn't listening.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
I want his take because he was so upset about the FBI black site, the floating black site with the large container.
Yeah.
And this is the super secret prison.
I thought about him instantly.
this is a deep black site, with the super secret prison on board that held all this, like the Gitmo on steroids, and also held all of our intelligence, all of our data intelligence.
I have one minor issue about this whole, like the way they introduced the factory.
Yes.
So when they finally introduced the factory and you got Wrestler saying, you know, he's at this off-site black ops site, the factory, everybody knew what the factory was. Even Aram knew what the factory was. And Lizzie's like, what's the factory?
No, well, I mean, look.
I mean, that kind of got me a little bit.
I got the impression that that the factory is like sort of a government CIA myth.
It seems folklore.
Right. It's a super, yeah. So like even around, like,
Navabi knew, everybody knew.
Well, because what
the janitor's sweeping by going, oh, the factory. I heard a legend about that.
Everybody knows that. No, I mean, because she's Mossad. She's a spy.
Yeah.
You know, that's not working for the FBI. Aram knows everything because he's sort of like heard stuff. The CIA folks knew stuff. So, but Harold's like, the factory. What's that?
Well, Lizzie was the one that said that.
Okay, well, that's true.
I think Harold even knew.
She's still a newbie.
You know who didn't know about the factory? It's Joe Sanfilippo.
Joe knew about the factory.
You did? Joe, we forgot to call you.
You're bad people.
We started the show, and we said, Joe should be calling any second. And then we realized that we didn't call you. So I'm sorry.
How long has the show been going?
2 hours.
Well, that's good.
It's a special.
Did you guys cover everything?
Not yes, that just about. No, we came in just in time. Got thought of you because I wanted to. We were talking about the factory, which is the blackest of black sites. I mean, the right. Deep black, like the Joe Braswell. It's the deep black site.
Like Joe Braswell, and then it's a deep black site everybody knows about.
Yes. So tell me what your impressions about the factory, Joe, cause since you were so you had so much to say about the floating tanker with the glass case cell that Red was in.
I had a problem with the tanker because it was for Red. Like right. That was the whole tanker was for Red.
Sure.
But this makes sense to me.
Fair
enough. This fulfills every horrifying CIA fantasy we all have.
Yes, it does. They weren't shy about
the fact that a Mossad agent would know more about it than the FBI. It's like, we got to keep this from the FBI. Those kids over there, we can't tell them all this stuff.
They're cops.
No crime. It's yeah. We can tell.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's something else. So what did you think of this episode, Jim? We all loved it. Give me some of your first impressions.
I thought it kicked butt. Jill Carnahan started the second half of the season off with bang, dude. I like this one a lot.
Yeah.
Ron Perlman, perfect. David Strathern, perfect.
Yep.
The Fulcrum, I love this. This is great. This was the best episode this season, in my opinion. I really thought this was great.
I agree. That's what I said. It's probably my favorite of the series, actually, so far. I've been really, really into it, like what they're doing here. So let's get into what happened. Like, so this apparently Red got himself captured to gain access to information that will lead him to the Fulcrum. But Pete needs to get that information before super badass Blacklister Luther gets it. So it's a pretty elaborate plan. But he's Red, so
well. He's not. I don't think he's trying to get the information from the Fulcrum. He's just trying to stop.
Well, I think it's both. I think first and foremost, he needs to make sure that Braxton does not get it because then that blows his cover that the agency thinks that he has it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Agency? Is that what they're called?
Well, the government.
The CIA.
The
agency. Yes.
The Illuminati guys.
So that's the number one plan. Amazing. But I think he also wants his hands on the Fulcrum as well. So it's two birds, one stone.
Hmm. Right. And I'm not, what was his plan exactly? He doesn't want any help from the FBI, any help from anybody. He gets himself captured, knows that getting himself captured in China, the CIA will take him to the deep black site because he's the number one wanted guy around. So mm-hmm. That's where he'll go. He gets there before he knows he's about to get tortured at some point, but he's like just handing out, numbers to get, he's going to bribe his way out of there. Like, how does he think this is going to go down? I wonder.
He was trying to get a face to face with the warden to warn him.
Right. And it worked.
What you got?
But it didn't. He didn't believe him.
Well, he got the face to face with the warden. He didn't spend the $50,000 because Desmond didn't take the money. He just got the warden to him. He didn't take the money at the first part.
Right.
He took the money afterwards.
Which is a very cool Reddington. He's just hollering, call this number 212-555. I love that. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess, his plan was to go in there because he figured the only way he can get to talk to the warden or try and warn them is to get captured himself.
Right.
But, of course, no one believes Red until it's too late.
Right.
Yeah. That's a typical thing.
So that happens. Now, then, obviously the CIA folks, what I didn't quite get is I love the introduction of Strathairn and the director and Janelle. Her characters, I love the idea of that, but then the quickness of which the CIA gives the FBI re-jurisdiction to go in with a helicopter, I thought was a little, that didn't seem quite right to me, but I don't know. How does that make sense, Joe Flippo? That CIA is like, okay, guys, go ahead.
As you know, I've spent 17 years in the CIA and the FBI. I'm deeply, deeply in.
You're an expert on FBI, on television FBI.
Is this a WTF moment we're about to hear?
Here's what I know about the FBI. FBI WTF, and I know that occasionally I take umbrage with tankers that drive around the Hudson Bay.
Yeah.
But I think we can accept for the purposes of storyline. I mean, we have to, at some point or another, willful suspension of disbelief. You can't, it's a 43-minute, they got 43 minutes of programming. They can't, there's no possible way to make it all make sense.
I 100% agree. I don't care. Like, I think that, like, they could have said, you know, Red's on a spaceship to Mars, and they've got it, like, it was so well executed that I didn't care. I think my disbelief was willfully suspended throughout this entire episode because I was just wanting to get to the part where Luther Braxton assembles his team of super badasses to go against Red's assembled super badasses, and they battle it out on the weird black site.
More or less, yeah.
That's what I wanted.
I kind of wanted to see at one point. I really wanted to see what do you call it? Perlman's character Braxton just put on a leather jacket with Sons of Anarchy in the back and just like, let's roll.
I don't know. What I will say is that because we've seen people die in end of season one, and because we've seen, you know, all bets are off and we're kind of repiloted here, I was really at the edge of my seat. I didn't know that. I know Samar. I know Samar's going to make it. I thought she might die. I thought Wrestler might go. I had no idea. Like, I was really genuinely, I thought Perlman could shoot anyone. I was really genuinely on the edge of my seat with this. I bought everything. I don't know. Jules,
I did too. That whole, the whole notion of that torture room with them hanging by the chains and just barely being able to touch the block underneath them was very quite upsetting to me. And I thought she was going to go too. Yeah. You know, she was writhing and wriggling, and her neck was breaking.
Yeah. Well, so, let's not forget Aram.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, his reaction when he heard Samar.
You're going to give him the code, aren't you?
You give him the code, right?
You're going to give him the code. Take it easy, Aram.
we all know you like her. Yes. We all know.
And I love that take into him. Air. When she said, when he read the badge, Aram did a take to camera like.
With his wide eyes.
I was like, no. Oh, that was adorable. I did like that a lot. I was really, really terrified.
But I think you know, without jumping, if we're going plot wise or whatever, without jumping ahead, I mean, seeing the end of this episode, it seems like there's a lot of people's lives who are at stake.
Sure.
At the end of this episode, so we really don't know still if Wrestler or Samar are making it.
We don't know.
Is amazing.
Yeah, it's a two-parter, so
yeah,
you know, we have no idea. I love that. I also love, we get a lot of, we got our wonderful Red monologues here. We got a couple good Red monologues, a couple good ones. We got
it was a brilliant one.
Yeah, brilliant one at the end. We got a playful one earlier.
The guy who stole the vase. Yes, and was found in the wall. The
he's got an. He's like
Bruno.
He's like the uncle with the crazy anecdotes. You know, reminds me of my cousin Bruno.
Yeah,
it's like
the fish in Mexico.
Yeah, well, that one was pretty.
That was a good one too.
Pretty deep.
And then we got a little peek into the history of Red and Luther. I mean, I like the fact that no matter how badass of a badass the Blacklister is, Red Reddington always seems to not be afraid and be up to the challenge. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, this is something that Spader is excellent at, because Spader is not probably the most badass guy in the world, but you know, I would totally believe that he's willing to stand toe-to-toe around Perlman. Like, on the phone, he's like, hello, Luther. And I'm like, oh, and then they talk about Belgrade and whatever happened there. And I totally believe that these guys are like adversaries and that Red is not afraid of this guy at all. The one guy on the planet.
Yeah.
I don't know. What did you think about the Joe, Flippo, what did you think about the Red, Red-Luther interactions?
I thought they had great chemistry. And, you know, it was funny, Mike Blanchard tweeted for us, which I thought was awesome. He's like, dude, Hellboy versus Ultron. Who'd have thought?
The ultimate geek out. That's right. Yeah. Hellboy versus Ultron.
Hellboy versus Ultron.
Thank you, Mike. That's a great one. Yeah. That's a
nerdgasm.
That's a nerdgasm. That we have. So, yeah. Go ahead, Joe.
I thought their chemistry was great. I bought it. Here's what I like. You know, Ron Perlman is a very, very big, physically imposing man.
Yep.
And I love that they had his character as more of a brutal guy. And calling out Red, like, everybody bought into you. Everybody thought you were so tough. You weren't that hard. I showed you in Belgrade. You weren't all that. Mm.
And you just get a real, you know, you get a real sense too that if you're in that life, you're in that world, or at least our fictionalized version of it, you don't have a room for anyone to think that you're weak for even a second. Like once they think you're weak, that's it, you're toast.
I loved all that stuff.
He would never have tried this if he didn't feel that he could have gotten away with it.
Yeah, all that stuff was fantastic. All that stuff about him calling him out as being like, you know, you're in your private jets and your tailored suits. Like,
do you even drive?
Yeah, do you even drive? Like, I'm a criminal, mother effer. Like I live this. That's what Ron Perlman was saying. Like, you're flying around on jets.
Thug life.
But we also know Red is a super badass. As the guy from the cartel found out when he in the warden's office.
That was bitchin'.
That was so cool.
That was a cool scene.
And what's my job? Oh no, your job is to die right now.
You're here for a message. I'm sending a message.
That was cool.
I would be really interested. I wrote that down. Morales and what happened. I have wrote it down somewhere in my notes. It'd be really interesting if we saw an episode in the future that had those facts.
Yes.
About that Felix Morales and whatever happened with the cartel. Yes. There.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, if this had ramifications, this little throwaway moment that looked so badass.
Yes.
Actually had something to play later on.
It could.
And I don't Lizzie know. Didn't even seem. Phased by it.
Yeah.
She's used to it by now.
Yeah.
By now. Which I want to go back to. The Lizzie-Red interactions are interesting. I mean, Lizzie's finally, I mean, she's doing, you know, she's 180 and then 180s again and then full circles and spins around. I mean, I don't know. But now she's, you know, there's that interaction like, you know, maybe I care about you.
Maybe I actually care about
you. Yeah, maybe I actually care. Like, I don't know. What are we getting? What are you sensing from your girl, Lizzie?
I think she's just... She has a major attachment to him now. Mm-hmm. They've been through a lot together. She has so many questions. And he does always protect her. And he is always looking out for her. And now she's starting to look out for him as well. She's a little bit hardened in comparison to as she was in the first season. But, you know, they've really spent the first half of this season, the second season, really showing us this harder side of her.
Right.
But I can't keep up whether she likes him, loves him, hates him, despises him.
Is attracted to him?
Like their family, huh?
What?
I said it's almost like they're family, huh?
Well, shut up, Joe.
I think
they're related.
I think there's a good. Well, no, I think he actually. I'm glad you brought that up. I think there really is a good point because we got to see a lot more color about this relationship, mm-hmm. and the fact that now we know that she has something to do with the fulcrum.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if the family connection is as obvious now. It kind of, I think it has more for the argument against them being and look, I'm pro family.
Yes,
so,
you are.
You know I am.
So let's,
I'm pro them being mommy, daddy, and daughter. But I feel like I always want to hear a story. Like, if you're going to prove me wrong, at least have a good story there. And mm-hmm. I feel like this whole thing that she's important to this fulcrum. Like, would he really put his daughter at stake for something like this? That's my question.
Yellow blouses for everyone. they're all yellow ones for everyone.
I'm just saying.
One thing I'm happy about, at least I hope, we were all getting so sick and tired of like this whole Lizzie, like, you know, I hate you, Red, and don't talk to me, and I love you, I hate you, like you're saying. Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, with all the information we got, she's already kind of warming up to him. Mm-hmm. Now, with all the information we got, it seems like Red's sort of like, you know, kind of spilling his guts. Ron Perlman spilled some guts there, so. Hopefully this draws them closer together and Lizzie can be more pro-Red. I'd like to see them just really willfully working together. I hate this faux sort of adversary crap. Oh, enough of it already. That doesn't really work. I don't think their chemistry is not strong enough to pull that off. Let them do work together and be either the, I don't want to say father-daughter, but just the teacher, student, the mentor, student. The
relationship. Well, I still think there's still going to be a little tension between the two of them. I mean, if you notice at the end of the episode, Braxton realizes that Lizzie is the girl.
Great moment.
He has this epiphany. He talks about the fire,
cool
the house, the girl, and then he looks. He goes, "Oh, she's the one."
Yeah.
And that's right around the time Red screams at Lizzie to shoot Braxton, and we don't know.
Yeah.
Based on the end of that episode, we don't. I don't think she shot him, no. But you see, Red's trying to get Lizzie to shoot Braxton because he obviously knows more that he can let Lizzie know about.
Well, it's just like when he smothered her adopted father, Sam, so he wouldn't tell. I mean,
yeah.
There were layered reasons for that, but that was a big reason.
So right now we're in a situation where Lizzie wants to keep Braxton alive, probably because she figures she can get more information from him than Red, and Red wants him dead. So they're already kind of, in a way, at odds at the end of this episode for a slight moment.
Flip, how are you feeling about Lizzie and Red?
I don't know anymore. I mean, obviously, I'm on the whole. She's got to be her dad, or it's weird camp. So that's
you've been saying that for, you know, months, 18 months.
18 months, not going to change. I don't know. Like, you know, it's just they had to do so many things that are so, like, so huge to not go to not have her figure this out. But it's got to be something so good that it's got to justify it. Otherwise, the character seems like a sociopath.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm hoping it's a father thing because I can't really see anything that goes beyond that that'll make sense.
Well, like I said, I agree with you on that. I just feel like this episode actually, for the first time in a long time, actually showed evidence that maybe it's possible that they might not be father-daughter and it's something believable. There's a believable
reason. It'll be interesting to see or ask if John and the gang knew from the get-go what the relationship was. I think Aram was saying that
that only James Spader knows.
Only Spader knows, but I think that, like, it feels like they have some, like, so this episode wasn't even shot yet when he came in the studio, right? I don't think it was, because he was saying
I don't think they shot it yet.
Yeah, so I feel like the writers had a lot of space to sort of, like, really map this thing out. It felt like, you know, the pilot was done. The whole last season was successful. The thing's a big hit. I feel like that they sort of took some time and really sort of gritted this thing out and said, okay, let's really make this story tighter and figure out how we're doing this thing and move forward. I just feel the thing getting a little tighter. And to answer your question, Joe, the introduction of her as a piece of the puzzle piece aside from Red that can get to Fulcrum, all the her being in the fire, all the stuff that Luther Braxton was saying. You know, this introduces a whole new potential storyline as to what their relationship could be. So the whole, I think it's a lot more complicated than just he's her dad. You know, I mean, I think that for season one that worked, but I think that they're really trying to steer us in a different direction and hopefully give us some different answers.
I hear what you're saying, and I want to say I'll reiterate. I will iterate again.
Multiple iterations.
The character has done so many things that are so enormous. Murders, you know, brutal ones, to protect this girl, that if they don't have something that is huge to justify it, the whole thing is going to fall flat on its face. So
maybe she has some weird DNA imprint or some weird chip in her brain or something, or some weird,
right,
I don't know.
Like, or did she get the Fulcrum under hypnosis? But then in that case, it's 30-year-old information. Is it even worth anything? I don't know. I mean, whatever it is, it has to be enough that they can hang an entire series on it, because the relationship is so, at this point, there's so much that's gone on. If he's not her father, it's got to be so big that it'll make it all still make sense and still make him a sympathetic character.
Sure, sure.
Well, there's obviously an emotional attachment that they have towards each other as well. It's not just he's protecting her as an asset because she's the key to finding the Fulcrum. There's tenderness and love there in some fashion. I still don't think that it's father-daughter.
Yeah, but he really cares about her.
Yes.
Deeply yes. Cares. And that wonderful monologue you talked about at the end, Joe, when he's sort of comparing himself to the creature who's
the
fish who, you know, has no sunlight and has become ugly. And then that was wonderful. I mean, you really sense that he wants a glimpse at, you know, to see if he has something to care about and someone to care about. And he really seems to be Lizzie. I don't know that it's because it's his daughter, but he wants to care. I don't know. I don't think it's her dad. I want to talk about some of these potential, you know, directions where we can go from here potentially, because there's a lot of things sort of set up, you know. With the introduction of the director, David Strathairn, as the shadowy, you know, ambiguous figure, is he... well, let's go around him. Is he hero? Villain or good guy? Or bad guy? Go.
Bad guy
for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, was Fitch a bad guy? I mean, is it gray? I mean, he seems kind of gray.
I feel like Fitch had a respect for Red that the director is lacking. So yeah. I think he'll be more cold blooded towards anything that we have attachment to, like Red.
And Fitch seemed to be the one who kind of had the organization, you know, at bay a little bit. Like, we need, you know, he was the one that kind of told, I think, that the organization that Red, you know, wouldn't be good to kill Red because of the whole Fulcrum thing.
Right.
And now that the director feels strongly that Red is, doesn't have the fulcrum. You know, there were other people in that little meeting that we didn't get to really see anybody.
Yeah.
That said, Red might still be powerful. He goes, well, we don't really need him. He's expendable now.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's more of a bad guy. I feel like Red was kind of a little leash on the rabid dog, and the director can definitely go after Red.
Good guy, bad guy, Julia.
Oh, totally a bad guy.
Bad guy. Flippo, bad guy?
Bad guy.
All right.
But they're all bad guys.
Excellent casting for a bad guy, though.
Yeah, oh, he's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's so
great.
Glad to see him.
They lit him all in the shadows and everything. He was looking great.
So great.
And then, you know, what about our girl Janelle Maloney? I mean, as the new CIA liaison, you know, I mean, she seems to be just kind of doing her job, quotes, taking orders, but she seems good, right?
I would say good guy.
I think she's only here probably for this episode and the next one probably because I think she's just a liaison for this operation.
Hmm.
She came in here for the mission, but I think we'll see more of the director, but I don't think we'll see more of her after Thursday's episode. That's just my thought.
Okay, well, yeah. I think that we.
But she's definitely in the dark. She was not in that meeting. Right. In that meeting with all those foreign, you know, people in the organization that were talking.
I feel like that she's gonna have to stick.
She was not eating dinner at the grown up table, that's for sure.
No.
She was at the kids' table with the rest of us.
Well, yeah. I think that this is why she'll probably end up sticking around instead of planner as the liaison. I think that the director thinks that he's getting his intel, you know, inside the FBI from her, and then I think that, well, I'm kind of jumping to predictions, but I feel like that she's going to side with, like, you know, sort of the Reddington and sort of really try to get in for it. She's the one who's gonna be able to be the mole to the CIA, the CIA mole to the FBI, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see
that. I don't know. I think that she's going to be part of the team in taking.
I think she'll stick around a little bit. I don't think we'll see her every single episode.
Right. Okay.
But when the director's around, I think she'll be around too.
Okay. So what happens if, we could not be hung further off of a cliff at this episode. I mean, we have, you know, Red yelling, shoot him. We have missiles inbound. We have now. I was in the impression that those missiles would vaporize the entire ship.
I thought so too.
Like there were 30 seconds out, and then we look out the window, and it was an explosion. There was an explosion, right?
I think so.
Yeah, it seemed to end right on the explosion.
So what the hell? What? How are they getting out of this, Batman? Like, Flippo, how are they getting out of this?
I don't know. They're just going to spader the shit out of it. That's how it works.
Yeah.
Right. So go ahead.
No, I got nothing. I mean, it's an oil platform, right? Is that the idea? So
yeah.
I got nothing, man.
Well,
I
don't know should how be you, super exploding.
F-22 Raptor fires whatever, you know, air to surface missile. It's gonna fire at you. It's not going to be fun.
No.
Yeah. One thing that I'm curious about, though, just from that ending. You know, we saw the Braxton's guys in that torture room,
mm-hmm.
With a gun pointed. It looked like at the guard's back, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Cliffhanger number three.
That's cliffhanger number three. But that was like a good 3 minutes before the end of the show. You know, at the same time, that's when Braxton had his gun out to Lizzie. Right? And then all of a sudden Red comes and saves her. But there's like a good 3 minute dialogue going on while this is, you know, happening down below.
You think all three of them are dead?
I don't think so, but I find it hard to believe that Samar or Wrestler would be dead. But at the same time, I'm like, what's going to stop them in that amount of time? That just seemed like a really weird, either a weird time to put that edit in there or what? You know, it's going to be hard for me.
Poorly timed in terms of real time.
Yeah.
Cool if it was cut all against each other. It was pretty cliffhangery, though.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it makes more sense that they'd be dead, but I just don't see that happening, but it's still weird.
Well, I mean, those missiles hit. They're all dead. I have no idea.
Yeah.
You know, I want to just, on that world thing, I think that was really cool. They did this kind of neat thing with Samar and the guard. It was sort of like it felt, I mean, Flip, you can speak to this too. It felt like sort of almost a semi-political comment because there's been so much made lately on Bill Maher and other places about Muslim extremists and it being about a religion versus the religion being bad versus the people being versus these group of thugs versus, you know, are all, you know, is it Islam that's causing that's bad or is it a group of thugs that are bad? I think that they did have this weird exchange that sort of like made a good quote unquote good person and a bad person, presumably both of Muslim faith, that that she made a plea to him, a faith-based plea to him that worked. And I think that was sort of just to tell, you know, it was kind of a subtle message saying that it's not about the religion. It's about the individual. Do you know what I'm saying, Flabeau?
I hear what you're saying.
Do you believe
water?
There's been a lot of time. There's been a lot of time on the like, Allah, you can't. Da, da, da. This is a guy, you know, as a Middle Eastern guy with guns pointed, you know, at a Middle Eastern woman. And it's been a lot of time. Do you really want to do this? Is this what you want to do? Go, well, you're FBI. You're bad. A lot of like rhetoric. And then it all comes like, is this what God wants you to do? And he's like, okay. You know, I mean, it was very, there's some statement made there. I mean, you had to have said that.
No, you're not wrong. You're 100% right. There was definitely a reason to do that. There was not an accident by any stretch.
How did you read that?
I think your reading on it is probably, I think you probably put more in it than Joe Carnahan did. But
I put more on it. It's right there. I'm reading the subtitles. I just like to argue with you, Joe.
No, I don't mean that. Well, I mean, like, I don't know if he's trying to make that big a political statement.
What's he doing then?
I agree with you that he's certainly saying that it's not that cut and dry. And here's another example. Because everyone's, you know, I mean, there's got to be a recognition that most of us, our experience with people from other parts of the world is, I mean, the majority of it's from television. So, you know, it's a better image than what it could have been. Certainly, I agree with you on that. It gave us a much more nuanced image.
Well, I say all that to say, not because I thought it was kind of an interesting moment, I thought it was kind of a cool moment, but I say all that to say, back to your point, Nando, like, you know, who knows? I mean, maybe she talks some sense into the guy. Maybe the guy is not going to shoot them. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? Who knows?
I mean, yeah, she was talking, you know, she was trying to cater to his morals throughout the show.
Right.
So it's possible, but I find it hard to believe.
Maybe in creating that connection between the two of them, once the missiles actually hit, they're going to have to find themselves, if they survive, working together to get out.
Right. And I just want to touch on, I also loved, I mentioned it before, but the idea of when they started running down the dossier of all the people that were in the prison, that Ron Perlman can help him. That's like right up my alley. That's right up there with the big board for me. Like, you know, Nando Velasquez, age 38, he's a specialist at blah, blah, blah. Like, I love all that stuff. And like, you know, and those guys all coming together and like, oh my God. And then Red says, I know people too.
Yeah.
And it's this guy, another guy. Like,
there isn't a prison where I don't know a few people.
Yes, unfortunately. Yeah. Joe, did you like that junk? I liked all that stuff.
No, that was great, man. That was really cool. It gives them all status, too. I'm a sucker for exposition that is done fast, that gives you, like, you know, if you don't have the time with the 43 minutes, you don't have the time. And right. I love that. Like, hey, you know, real quick, boom, boom, boom. And now without spending any scenes on it, you got these, we have respect. I love it.
I just love it, like, whether it's a Dirty Dozen or Magnificent Seven or it's whatever, the Super Friends. I love the idea of assembling a team. You know, like
one of the Super Friends.
We've got a
Wonder Twin Flowers.
I'm dating myself with the Super Friends, but we've got to assemble a team of badasses. It was also of Joe Carnahan. Yeah, very Smoking Aces. Very Smoking Aces moment for Joe Carnahan there. I love all that stuff. Okay, so yeah, man. I don't know. We'll see how this all happens. What else? What else do? We miss anything specific in there? We get to we got the wrestler. We got to the confrontation, we got to the Lizzie, we got to the FBI /CIA thing, went to the fulcrum. That's a lot. It's a lot covered.
That's a lot covered.
That was a lot of, I know we didn't get to.
What?
Red's a badass. He had the shot with a bloody.
That was a very bloody scene.
A bloody Red with a giant shotgun walking through the prison riot,
that
taking
ass,
MFs out.
That big ass guy. He's like, I need your shotgun.
He's like, wow, I'm going to need that shotgun. Yeah, that was on some, that's kind of, again, we saw all shades of Reddington here. Like, we saw, you know,
he'd been egged on a little bit by Braxton.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Saying he's soft, saying he's spoiled, saying that he can't quite cut it, and obviously he still can.
Yeah. And that was also, like, we saw those in the promos, but that's also for the new viewers, too. I think the new viewers get a picture of the intellectual Red, that exposition with Braxton saying, you know, you're tailored suits and blah, blah, blah. That kind of gives the new viewers, like, who this guy is. But then we see Red be a badass. So it was really, really cool stuff. Joe, did you like the shotgun? Did you like that bit?
No, it was beautiful. And you're right. The exposition, the way they did it was very smooth. And anybody who watched from the Super Bowl on, you know, you weren't going to get caught up by any stretch of the imagination, but you'd be at least walk away going,
That show's pretty cool. That's cool. I get it. That's
yeah,
cool.
Well, you have to understand too, like, us watching the show, we're big fans. Whenever Red starts talking into one of his stories, like, sure. You know, that reminds me of a story I want to say. We all love that. But someone who just tuned in after a big, you know, ego, you know, male brouhaha fest like the Super Bowl is going to want to see some action. So yeah. You want to – and like we said earlier, you know, you see Ron Perlman, big guy, playing Luther Braxton, bad guy. And you see James Spader playing, you know, Red Reddington, who's not as muscular, big, whatever. We want to see proof as to why Red is a badass and why he's fearful.
I'm going to say one thing that's a little, maybe a little controversial for listeners or viewers or whatever, but I think we're all in lockstep on this. I think what the show's also figured out is the show is about Red and James Spader. The show's at its best when Red's Red, and then whoever the blacklister is elevated to Red's level. The blacklister and Red are the most important areas of the elements of the show. Now you add this whole super other villain here with the director.
Yeah,
that's amazing. In the way in the background there, you have Lizzie.
Yeah,
Lizzie. Not a lot of Lizzie in this episode, and I was okay with it.
Well, then you don't forget we lost Berlin and we lost Finch from the first half of the season. So
all right, it's all done.
Yeah,
I mean, do you follow that? I mean, Julia, what do you think about that sort of like?
I agree. This is Red's show. I lay in wait when he's not on on the screen. That's all I want at all times. I just want Spader on the screen.
Yeah.
So I was fine with them paring her back a little bit in this episode. But it was also a very explosion-y episode. It was a very action-packed episode, which I think you're totally right, Nando. I don't say that very often.
I know. It's a new year.
But riding on the coattails of this big epic Super Bowl sort of eases people into this show and gives an idea of what it is. But I just want Red all the time. And I think that it was layered really well. And I mean, I loved this episode. And I have no problem with them pairing Lizzie back a little bit.
Filippo, did you want more Lizzie? More wrestler?
I'm sorry. No. No, I think it was just the right amount of Lizzie.
Okay.
Just right.
Nando?
That was just fine.
How you feeling?
Can't say enough about Joe Carnahan. The pacing of it, the tempo, really, really, really well done. And it felt to me, you know, like the Blacklist is in. I think he's the best director that they've got. And I think if they could have him direct more episodes, I think it would benefit the show.
I
really feel like he's got a good handle on the pace and the tempo that the show functions the best in. I walked away from this. I didn't have any Lennox moments that I wanted to make fun of. I didn't have any Diego Klatnoff moments where I was like, oh, come on, because he doesn't give you room for that. Like he keeps it tight enough. Does that make any sense?
Oh, I had one moment.
Go ahead.
The breathe, you son of a bitch.
Oh yeah,
that was my moment. That killed me. It killed me.
Some fine acting. some fine acting.
Killed my soul.
Some fine acting going on there. Joe, I mean, Flip, yeah, Joe Carnahan's big time movie director. Big time movie director directing big time movies. He's got no time to be directing Blacklist.
I don't even know how he had the time to do this.
Well, it's his show. Like, you know, he's a co-creator of the show and executive producer, and he dips in to make sure it's going well, and then he'll dip out, and then he'll probably dip in to direct the finale, and, you know, that's what he does. That's what he's there for. Are you okay with Lizzie? You want more Lizzie? What do you got?
I will say this. I like the direction they're taking this with Lizzie right now. The fact this whole fulcrum thing that she is a fulcrum.
Yes.
So it seems to be shifting. So I don't know if the answer is that I want more Lizzie. I don't want the old Lizzie. I'm kind of liking the shift that they're doing here. But we still want to see Red is the priority, and whoever Red is up against, I think, is also the priority.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Nando, you've spent a lot of time. We all spent time. We read a bunch. For some news here, I don't know. Do we just do the news drop? Do we do that still? I don't know.
Yeah, we can do a news drop.
Okay.
AfterBuzz TV News.
What
do you got, Nando?
Of course, my internet's kind of down. Blacklist was probably one of the most tweeted shows yesterday. Obviously, there wasn't that much competition because of the Super Bowl. Super Bowl was the highest tweeted show.
Wait, that was Super Bowl's yesterday?
Yeah, Super Bowl was yesterday, too. And the Australian Open, actually, the finals of the Australian Open was also heavily tweeted. But then the Blacklist was, I think, just about the biggest TV show that was being tweeted, followed by Jimmy Fallon.
Right.
And then, of course, the ratings went up. The impressive thing, I think, to take note of is that the Blacklist ratings were higher than any other post Super Bowl show since the last time NBC had had the Super Bowl, and that was The Voice was the follow up.
Wow.
So,
which is interesting because the ratings in general go down because we live in this sort of the more channels, the more like the numbers. The numbers aren't what they used to be. Like, you know, the Cosby show got like a 30, you know, 30 million people watch the Cosby show now. So, that's great to see that.
But it was up 11% from, I think it was up 11% from Fox's telecast last year of The New Girl. So, I mean, New Girl, Blacklist, obviously very, very different.
Sure.
And, so again, just based on all the trades and everything, everyone seems to think that it was a success for NBC to put Blacklist on after the Super Bowl. It was great for the Blacklist. And of course, I think the big thing that we get to see coming up is how it's going to fare in its new time slot. It's going to be on Thursday nights at 9 o'clock, and it's going to be up against Scandal. It's a very heavily contested day.
Yeah.
Thursday nights. NBC used to own Thursday nights, way back when.
Must see TV.
Must see TV. Yeah. And it's very interesting because they have it opposite Scandal. So that's going to be a very big one. I think CBS still has 2.5 minutes. And then they're switching something else on that time slot. But the other interesting thing about The Blacklist, it's on 9 o'clock, sandwiched in between two other new dramas, The Slap at 8 o'clock and Allegiance at 10.
Right.
So, yeah, there's no real hope for a lead-in from anything powerful at 8. And it just seems like they're really resting a lot on The Blacklist to be in there to bring viewers to Thursday nights.
Yeah, I mean, usually, instead of launching with a new show, you launch with The Blacklist, and then you take all those eyeballs, all those new eyeballs, over to Thursday night to help launch your two new dramas. I mean, it's a nice strategy. I mean, Allegiance is, looks like it's kind of an American's ripoff, an American's guy.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to give it a chance or not, because I'm like, Americans. But The Slap looks really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I mean, it could work. If those shows are any good, NBC could, this could be a coup. They could win back Thursday nights. I don't know. So that's good.
I mean, Scandal does fairly well, but I think Blacklist was doing better overall in ratings over
different
Scandal.
Different audiences, though. I feel like the Scandal watchers aren't the Blacklist watchers, you know?
I like both shows, but I'm a little behind on Scandal, honestly. Right. So obviously I'll be watching Blacklist to do this show.
Sure. Well, I love them both, too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool.
I think that's about it.
Predictions?
Yeah, let's go to predictions.
All right.
And now, your AfterBuzz TV. Predictions.
Josie, I'm flipping since you're on the phone. Why don't you tell Julia that she has to go first?
Julia, you have to go first.
Some things don't change.
Okay. All right. Predictions. I'm the
tell
worst.
Her she's won, Jet.
Okay, so Lizzie is the key to the fulcrum. That being said, I think that... The fulcrum is either embedded in her memory that her father had it before the fire and she saw it, or it's in a microchip form and it's somewhere either on her person or in some beloved item like her bunny that they always, always show in that fire.
Oh my God! I should have gone first.
So I think that this next episode is going to be, Luther. Luther trying to extract this information from her.
Does Luther live or die?
From the explosion, he lives.
Okay. I mean...
Oh, and I don't think that... I think that one of the guys, either Samara or Wrestler, I don't think that one of them's not going to make it out.
Okay. Nando.
Let me preface this by saying, I don't know if anyone else has seen it, but I managed to see, the preview for next week or for Thursday. Uh-huh. So for anyone who doesn't like seeing, hearing this stuff, there are spoilers ahead for Thursday's thing.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Well, I'm going to say that based on what you said, it sounds like you saw that because they do show that your prediction.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
They actually do show that.
2015, maybe I'm getting my groove.
So, or maybe you saw it and you just forgot that you saw the preview for Thursday because they actually showed that.
What did they show?
What's your prediction?
Well, let me just say what they showed. If you're listening right now, now's the time you just tune up for 30 seconds. They showed that Braxton is alive and he has Lizzie kidnapped and she's on a gurney and he's trying to extract information from her.
Okay.
And they actually have something that says Red's worst nightmare. So, so absolutely. So that seems to be happening. I guess my prediction would generally be, I want to see Ron Perlman get away in general.
Yeah.
You know, sure. I want to see him return. I want him to be like the next Berlin, at least be in multi-episode.
Yeah,
you know,
great.
And same thing with the director, obviously. I love the director. I want to see him. I think the director and Red are going to meet head to head and they have a big history. Red knows the director really, really
sure.
well. I can't wait to actually see those two meet.
Maybe he's my super blacklister.
Yeah. And I don't think anyone's going to die. I think that would really suck. I think, obviously you want to see, you want to see Samar survive just because of a little love connection there.
Yeah, Aram. Aram. We'll be devastated. Flippo, you got any predictions?
I was going to do a quick shout-out. Caitlin Kay tweeted that she said that the fulcrum is in the bunny, which I thought was, and then Julia. You can do it because Julia got to go first. Well, I had to go first. That's not fair.
Right.
I think if Lizzie...
Hold on. I'm sorry, Joe. I have to interrupt. Are you with your computer open, like live tweeting right now? Are you checking Twitter? Are you actually on Twitter right now? That can't be right.
I looked at it. I wouldn't say I was on it.
Okay. What is good? Like, the world is ending. Flippo's like live on Twitter, like checking stuff out. That's a second Twitter shout out. Okay, go ahead.
I pay attention to the young people.
All right.
Boy.
Good.
Twitter boxer. So if Lizzie is the key to the fulcrum, then I think it's going to be something embedded in her memory. Because it was 30 years ago, we didn't have microchips that wouldn't have been like...
It was 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
20 years ago.
20 years ago?
Yeah, so it was after 8-track cassettes.
That's a tougher call.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with hypnosis. I'm going to go like hypnosis to get it out.
Hmm.
That's what I predict.
Okay. My prediction is I think it is something physical. You know, the bunny, the scar. I don't know.
The scar.
It's something was there. But I'm curious as to why Perlman knows. Why does he know the information? Like,
don't know.
How does he know who the girl? They all want to know about the girl. And who else knows about the girl? How come no one else is making that connection? If he knows, how come the director doesn't know? I don't know. It seems like a little, I don't know. A prediction. I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't have any.
Oh, you sound like me.
I don't know what to say. I don't think I think Wrestler or Samara will not make it out of that.
One of them's not going to make it.
Yeah, that's my prediction. Okay. Which is someone else's prediction.
It just seems crazy that they would have these massive missiles blow up this prison and everybody makes it out alive.
Right.
Because you know Lizzie's going to. You know Red's going to.
Yeah.
We know that Braxton's going to
because
we know he's in the next episode. Everybody's going to survive.
I don't know. Maybe they call it the strike. I don't know.
But there's already missiles coming.
I thought it was going to be one of those moves where they press a button and the missiles self-destruct or something. Like one of those moves.
They're duds.
Yeah, they're duds. I don't know. Like in The Rock. Didn't that happen in The Rock? I don't know. All right. I guess that's it.
Yeah.
Well, God, that's a lot. That's 57 minutes, and we talked about the blacklist for 30.
So that's good. More than 30.
I'm just kidding. We're very happy to be back. Thanks for downloading us and listening to us on iTunes. If you're watching on YouTube now, hello. Thanks for watching us on YouTube as well. We welcome all of your comments. We can't wait to talk to you and engage with all of you again. Very excited about this Thursday. Right?
Yeah. Thursday, 9 o'clock. New time
9
slot.
9 o'clock, new time slot for the blacklist. Joe Flippo, where can we find you?
You can find me at Joe Flippo, at Joe Flippo on Twitter, and my website is josephstanflippo.com.
Great. Nando.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at NandoVell, NandoVell, and here on some other shows like The Walking Dead returning this week as well, and Scorpion.
Julia.
Twitter and Instagram with my name, Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY.
And I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Not on the Americans this time around.
What?
Joe Flip and I are very disappointed about that. I know some of you mentioned it. Could not do it, but we are here in the blacklist. We're very happy to do that. So thank you so much for listening, listening and watching us, and we will see you all next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.